Guys, I can't breathe. I'm on the top of some mountain, and all I have is me and my altimeter, and it says I'm super, super, super high, and I'm really, really nervous. Wait a minute. I'm at the top of the Beverly Center shopping mall. Never mind. Welcome to Smartless.
Smart.
Wait, first of all, Jay, tell us how it's going. You started your film.
Yes, it's good. You don't want to hear boring work crap. I appreciate you asking, but
have you ever thought about directing? Has that bug grabbed you yet?
He's coming with gas today. Let's buckle up.
Yeah.
It's how's your work? You're getting ready to start your rehearsals, yes?
All right, stop. Not soon. For 6 months. But listen, back to you for a second. Nice deflection.
Back to you, Ian.
But it's really exciting. You're doing a movie with Taron Egerton, right? And what's it called?
Are you a fan? It's called Carry On.
Have you started this week?
I spent the day with Danny Deez today.
Okay, let's talk.
Sweet Pete Giles, Danny Deez, and our good friend.
What, golfing?
Rob Lowe, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Hey, guess what? I tried pickleball. For the first time.
Did you?
Yeah, did you?
Boy, my neck is snapping all over the place. Let's just keep switching subjects.
Oh, wait a minute. But did you play golf with them, Will?
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah.
So I played pickleball, I think at the same place you guys play golf.
Probably not.
And
they wouldn't dare let
oh,
that.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. It was fun.
Who'd you play with?
I played Kevin Carey, who you know.
Oh, yeah, sure. They're nice peeps.
And
I like Kevin and Carey.
Yeah, and our friend
Renee. I just don't like the sound it makes.
And Scotty.
There's such a great sound to a tennis ball hitting a tennis racket right in the middle of the strings.
Yeah, but...
But that wiffle ball hitting a wood, it's... I don't mean to sound like a purist.
A lot of communities on the East Coast are now not letting people build pickleball courts at home because they're too loud.
Huh.
They're too loud.
Yeah.
It's just like hitting a wiffle ball.
Tink. No.
Speaking of noise pollution and the West Coast versus East Coast, I hear that here on the West Coast, they are outlawing gas blowers for leaves you can only use an electric one now.
Is that what you're going to use?
Yeah, I mean, it's I just redid. I just rebuilt the engine on my last one. Gas is getting so expensive. So this is going to be good, but I'll be upside down for a while.
Okay, good.
Oh, I misheard. I was thinking about pros who hang around gas stations. I was like, that's been outlawed for a while, but
you
do
heard
I know?
Blow and gas and everything.
Yeah,
listener, you've got a Saturday record here, and and it's a 4:30 start.
Right, it's late in the day,
and everyone's a little punchy.
Yeah, but wait, Jason. So do you still you fly home every weekend from the shoot?
I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that exhausting?
Well, no, you sleep on the plane and, the excitement and the love that you feel approaching your family supersedes any fatigue, Sean.
All right.
Sure.
I got it.
And
get ready.
How was the flight? It was good. It was good. Do they serve a meal on that?
Well, no, you got to pay extra for that. And if you want Wi-Fi or you want to watch a movie or something like that. So what I do is I just bring on my sleep mask.
Right.
And
you've got a neck pillow.
Got blinders on it too. So it just sort of sends up a signal.
Yeah.
Please don't speak to me. I've got sleep issues.
Sean, I wanted to know right behind you, that's a television?
That's a television, yeah.
Yeah. And that's your desk in your office, right? Your home office?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what's the point?
Because I was podcasting off my dining room table.
Don't say podcasting.
I was doing this.
It's not a verb.
Okay, here we go. Ready?
Oh, here we go. Sorry, are you ready to start? Why are you letting... I'm just saying that TV, I mean, it's pointed at the back of your head.
Well, I would turn around. I'm on a swivel chair. I would turn around. Or I would sit on the couch behind me that you can't see.
It's never happened.
And it happened once.
Will, why aren't you wearing white? What happened?
Usually, well, because you know I wear white. Often when we do them in the morning, I wear like a long sleeve white T-shirt around the house and to bed and stuff. You know that. You know.
Wait, why do you wear long sleeves?
Because
why do you wear a long sleeve T-shirt?
Because that's a new thing. It's like the last 18 months because I my room to be very cold, but I don't want to have the sheet, the covers on me.
You don't want your elbows to get chilly.
Yeah.
I do the exact
same thing. Hey, Sean, hang on. This wasn't your cue to tap in on the conversation.
No, let him be excited.
I found somebody that gets that.
Yeah. So
that is exactly right.
It's a new thing. I'm learning all these things. Like, I feel like I'm firmly getting older because I'm like, yeah, I'm happy with this. Yeah, I'm happy doing it like this. This is the way I like to do it now.
You're talking to a guy who's been wearing pajamas for the last 15 years.
Well, I know. I can't believe that you would pass judgment on anybody on this show.
I'm not.
Like
it's not pass judgment. I'm wondering if I can welcome you into my, you know what I've got on now? Because we've entered fall.
Let's see
your
pants.
This is basically.
They're the flannel pants.
Yeah, and I've got my Birks on and socks.
Yeah.
Socks. I mean, you're in no position.
No, I was wondering if I can welcome you to Granddad Land yet. I guess
no, but
I can.
I'm wearing it. But I was out, so I'm not wearing white because I just, like I said, I just got back from playing golf with those guys.
I wasn't
guys.
Looking for 4 minutes on this.
Okay, wait, let's go. Let's go. Wait, I don't want to.
Oh, let's go.
Guests
Here
waiting.
We go. Let's start podcasting, right, Sean? We got our setup. Now we're podcasting. Let's get podcasting.
Okay, come on. Ready? Here
okay,
we go.
Okay, come on. Okay, here
I'm
we go.
I'm super excited, you guys. This one's big today.
Oh, fuck. Sorry. Did I fuck up your opening line? I keep
all
your
the
time.
No,
keep,
it's big.
I'm super
big.
Excited.
This
okay,
is big. I'm super excited. This guy. I want to pick this guy's brain. He's been on my smart list since the day we started. He's also been on my personal list of people I've always wanted to meet and work with since I was a teenager.
Wow. John Travolta.
Will. He's from your homeland, which means he's nice and probably ice skates.
Let's see.
Guys, we're dealing with a major player here in Hollywood, so I'll hold off on all his credits because you'd guess in 2 seconds. But I'll just say he worked as a janitor before making it in the film industry. He also lived in his car while creating a very famous film. He loves the ocean so much that he built his own submarine. And he may have written dialogue such as, I'll be back from his car. He's responsible for directing two of the three highest-grossing films of all
time.
James
Cameron?
It's the brilliant James Cameron.
Holy Christ.
What?
What's up, guys?
This is a mistake.
What?
What's up, guys? I gotta put my glasses on so I can see who's talking.
Well, it really doesn't matter. Oh, yeah, That did shit.
That didn't help at all.
It doesn't matter.
Hey, can we swear on this thing?
Sure. Yes. Are you kidding me?
Please. Do we just beep it out later?
Good.
No.
James Cameron, you really have been on my smart list since the day we started. You've been a part of my nerd childhood from Terminator to Aliens to The Abyss, which is one of my favorite movies, Titanic, of course, and now my adult nerd adulthood with Avatar and the 17 sequels. So thank you for being on today. This is huge for us. I've just been a massive, massive fan for my whole life.
Well, thank you.
Welcome to podcasting.
Thank you. Yeah, I've never done it before. It seems pretty straightforward. You just sit around and dribble on about inconsequential bullshit for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
I got it.
Okay.
It's kind of like directing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit.
Except not at all.
Yeah. You look very healthy and rested for a guy who's been doing some of the toughest work the town has to offer for the last 30 years. Yeah?
Yeah, we're in the home stretch of 5 years of continuous production now.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, Sigourney was just on and telling us about that. And remind me, you're not shooting all five Avatars at the same time, correct?
No, the thinking was to be semi-sane and shoot the first couple, and then if that actually worked, finish them out. But it's also, we have a young cast, and they would have aged out of their characters if we had waited to kind of just do them a couple of years apart.
Right.
So we shot all their bit.
Wow.
Well, you're talking to a real moron here, but because it's—
You can't see him, but it's Jason talking.
If he or she starts to age out, can't you kind of offset that a bit with some of the computer manipulation that you're doing anyway with their faces or no?
You're 100% right, except that I've got one young character who's supposed to be 15, 16 in the story, and he's a human kid who's in with the Na'vi kids, and we shoot him photographically. But you're right. Some of the Na'vi kids, they could come back at 22, 23 and still do their 17-year-old character because the character doesn't age unless we age the characters in CG.
Right. Yes.
God, it's fascinating. Your brain is fascinating. Okay, so—
Try living in it.
Yeah.
I have no idea you were Canadian. That's, you know, yeah. You learn a little something every day.
So I wanted to get into that.
You're
so,
Toronto, right?
I'm from Toronto. Where are you from?
Yeah. Chippewa, Niagara Falls.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So very close.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how long, what year did you sort of move from Canada? Did you leave Canada?
I left with my parents in 71. I was 17 and rocked up in Orange County. Then later, obviously, moved down to L.A. proper. Wow. And, you know, that was 48 years ago.
Do you feel any connection anymore to Canada in that way? Or is
yeah.
That, yeah, you do?
Yeah. We have a couple of businesses in Saskatchewan. So I mostly get back to Canada to work on that stuff.
Like yeah. Running booze or what?
Yeah,
what
do you guys yeah right.
Mule and stuff?
Bootleggers.
Bootleggers.
No, we grow yellow peas and fava beans and lentils, and we do plant-based protein. We built a factory there for plant-based protein.
So, wow. So walk
That's
me through this.
That's why you look so healthy.
I know, it's
good
true. So walk me through this. So you're a young guy who grew up in the Niagara Falls area of
yeah. So that's not New York. That's not Buffalo.
It's close to it.
There's a good Niagara Falls and a bad Niagara Falls. The yeah. good one just happens to be in Canada.
That's right.
I got it. So yeah. There's plenty of falls to go around.
Lots yeah. of falls.
Yeah. Right. You should learn some stuff. But so, you know, you grew up in Ontario, near Niagara Falls,
yeah.
Ontario.
Yeah.
How, at when you were a young man living there, did you have aspirations to be a director at that time? Was there something that grabbed yeah. you and said, I want to do this when you were living there?
Yeah, I like movies, and I was making little films just with a Super 8 camera, stuff like that. But the idea that I could actually go and do it for real was so alien and bizarre. It never really occurred to me. But when my parents asked me if I wanted to move to Los Angeles, because my dad had gotten the opportunity to do a transfer there, I said, isn't that near Hollywood? Mm. And my mom said, well, we're not really sure, sweetheart, but we think that Hollywood is actually in Los Angeles. I said, I'm in.
Wow. How about that?
Do yeah. you remember the moment that the technology that is specific to some of the parts of movie making really grabbed you and you're like, ooh, I'd love to incorporate that into some of the more traditional sort of filmmaking techniques and stuff. What was it? It wasn't like the... you tell me.
I was just fascinated by all of it. You know, yeah. just grabbing a camera, running around town, shooting neon signs and cutting it together in all yeah. kinds of crazy ways. I mean, all the stuff you do as a film student, you know, just trying to express yourself, figure out what you have to say, if anything.
Sure.
You know. But I remember 2001, A Space Odyssey, which I saw in 68, really kind of just tweaked my brain
yeah.
about what was possible. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I got really interested in how things were done, you know, on yeah. on big movies.
Sure.
And you worked at, you know, when you were, what did you do on Escape from New York, which I love that movie, John Carpenter?
That's such a great movie, yeah.
Weren't you like the visual effects photographer or something?
I was the co-supervisor of visual effects with another guy named Robert Skotak, who was a pal of mine back then. And we did it all really old school stuff, paintings on glass and things like that.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Ernest Borgnine was in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, Jason has a real connection with Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah. Do you have any ability to prove the fact? Will's got a theory that Ernest
Borgnine.
Not a theory.
He gave an interview.
Yeah.
Multiple interviews.
Jason lives in Ernest Borgnine's old house.
Wow.
And Will is convinced that.
Not convinced. He said in a couple interviews that somebody asked him what was the key to his longevity, and he claimed that it was a ritual of daily masturbation. And I said, Jason, when you're in your house, do you imagine Ernest, you know, in different parts of the house, just kind of leaning over the banister, up against sure. the wall in the dining room, sure. whatever, performing this act in an exercise?
Why is he
of
always standing up?
Well,
why is
he standing? Because he's trying to stay older. He's trying to live longer. Anyway.
James Cameron is here.
I think it's a good plan.
Yeah,
I think it's a good plan.
Did you ever see any of that on the set of Escape from New York?
The beauty of his plan is there's no downside.
Yeah, there it is.
That's right.
You either live longer or you don't, but at least you're enjoying it every day.
That's right. That's right.
They say live for every day, right?
So There you go. Thank you for
that's
and it's also it's victimless.
Now, did I see him wanking on the set? No.
Yeah.
No. I can't help you with that.
Right. Okay. You never came back to base camp and caught Ernest Borgnine snapping one off. Hey, James
standing up outside his trailer.
Just saying, God, I wish I was at home. Hey, James, I wanted to ask you, sorry. Okay. I wanted to ask you, so was and please do correct me, was the first film that you directed
Piranha 2.
Oh, I was going to say Terminator. Oh, Piranha 2.
Right? Well, it was the first big studio movie you did, Piranha 2.
So here's to clarify. The first film I got hired to direct was Piranha 2. I got fired about 8 days into shooting.
Wow.
Because the producer just wanted to take over. Yeah, that was his plan the whole time. I was like a sacrificial lamb. And right. The first film that I actually fully directed was The Terminator. So that's the only one I put on my resume.
Is that true that you were living in your car when you wrote it and all that?
Not really. I had an apartment in Tarzana, but I used to go out to Dupar's on Ventura Boulevard late at night, 3 a.m., and just write, just rock up in a booth and just write, you know, just to keep that kind of dark film noir.
They turn that into a Sephora now. It's a Sephora now.
Yeah, right. Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Where did you get the idea? Like, the idea is so incredible about sending somebody from the future and the back to stop somebody before they, the whole thing is so it's amazing. Where does that come from?
I kind of backed into it because it was like, all right, what kind of film will they let me direct? It's got to be something I could shoot on the streets of present day LA where I live. It's got to be low budget. We can't do a lot of stuff. Maybe we can do a couple.
And they know you've
chases.
Just been fired off the Deadly Fish movie. So
I had to factor that in too. Yeah. So it wasn't going to be a big budget. So then I thought, all right, so how can I get but I wanted to also sort of make my unique skill set valuable as an effects guy. Right. So I thought, all right, so what kind of effects science fiction story can I tell on the streets of LA? Well, there's only two ways to get something extraordinary here. That's either from space or from somewhere else in time, right? So now all of a sudden, boom, okay, it's a time travel story. Something comes from the future. Why? Okay, and then you go into the grandfather paradox and figure out, you know. So it just kind of dominoed from the kind of parameters of my life and what I needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, because nothing of it looks low budget, by the way. I mean, especially at the time. And I read...
You haven't seen it lately.
But at the time, it was, like, pretty incredible. And I read somewhere that you didn't have permits and you kind of shot stuff illegally.
Right.
And like,
yeah.
What does law enforcement say to James Cameron before he's James Cameron? Like, did you get caught?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're out in the desert doing the final shot of the movie. And, you know, we got a little wooden platform set up. It was me, my wife at the time. Actually, we weren't married at the time. Gail Hurd, who produced it, and her secretary. And we had built this little camera platform to shoot the plate for the last shot. And there's nothing visible for 20 miles in any direction. And this little glint on the horizon pulls up, and it's a cop. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Mm-hmm. And he walks up to us and says, you have a permit to be doing this?
Oh, boy.
And I said, no, but I'm just a student at UCLA. I think I was 29 at the time.
Oh, my God.
I said, do we need a permit? I didn't know that. And he goes, well, get that off the road. We were on the road by like a foot. And he drove away. So that was it. I just bullshitted my way out of it.
And so you cast, and your cast is, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who at the time had been doing the Conan movies and stuff. He wasn't he wasn't this huge
Conan.
International.
Conan,
whatever it is. He wasn't this huge international superstar that he ended up becoming. Yep. Terminator was really the sort of seminal role in his career at that point. That was the thing that really shot him forward. What was that like as a 29-year-old, young filmmaker who's trying to make his mark with a guy who's coming from doing these films that weren't necessarily mainstream and big movies? Did you see, was it like the perfect combination in a lot of ways for you guys?
Yeah, we clicked right away. I mean, Arnold is just all about discipline and all about, you know, perfection and trying as hard as you can mentally and physically. And he saw a kind of kindred spirit in me because, you know, we were trying to move mountains to make this movie. He loved the film. I mean, they had the axe all sharpened up and poised to chop me off on day two. If I tripped up, they had another director waiting in the wings. And Arnold really kind of had my back on that movie.
Well, that's great. That's amazing.
Wow.
And we will be right back.
We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8+ acres. I gotta keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8+ acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're gonna go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work. Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet, it's chewy, it's cool, it's creamy, all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it, first of all. An absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
And now back to the show.
How far do you think we are from completely replacing actors with computer-generated people? Because they're kind of doing that, or well, they are doing that on online, right, with deepfakes and stuff like that are really, really convincing. Is that not that, you know, I'm looking to get actors out of movies by any stretch, nobody is being one. But I'll bet you that there are moments like if you need to fill in crowds and stuff like that, there's already that, you know, the tiles.
Well, we do all that.
But like actually putting somebody in the foreground on a mark saying lines, you know, you're doing that to a certain extent when you're,
It's not what we do. Like with the Avatar films, it's a very actor-centric, actor-driven process.
Yeah.
We're not trying to replace the actor. We're trying to perfect what they did in a character that doesn't resemble them as much physically, right? Mm-hmm. So in a sense, it's more like makeup. It's 100% actor-driven, and we always honor the performance and the nuance of that performance, and you'll see it in the new film. That's my pitch. I'm done. but the kicker is I would have said never when I made the first film. Today, with what I know about AI and the developments in artificial general intelligence and all the work that's being done, I would say if you converge the tool set that we have created for Avatar and focused it, literally put money into that and focused it in terms of getting it closer to a real-time process, and you added AI to that, you could fake anything. You just can't do it yet. You can't do it in real time. You can do it with a 1 month or 5 month lag right now perfectly, which is kind of what we do. We had 3,200 shots in Avatar 2 that prove that.
But do you think there's any value in pursuing that and in going down that direction?
I think that it has more to do with, do we want to have photoreal avatars that we can wear or project within into a metaverse type environment or a gaming environment, right? I don't think it has anything to do with how we would create our entertainment. It's still just so much easier and, by the way, more fun to just work with actors.
Yeah, what about for like a little reshoot though? You know, like say your actor's gone off and cut their hair and you got to do a little additional, right?
Yeah, but you'd still do it with the actor. See, so like we got this human kid in our story. If I need a pickup with him for Avatar 3, he's already aged out of the part by miles. Right. You know, he's a foot and a half taller. He's two octaves down. You know, we can repitch his voice, but we can't change his body and face aging. So if I need that pickup, I'll have him come in. We'll capture it. Yeah. We have his model, and we'll basically just put him in the movie as a human.
Huh. All right, so I have like a little bit of a long, so hang in there. This is what I love about you, James Cameron. Jim now. Now we can call you Jim, right?
Easy, yeah.
So what I love about you is you're a total, like, a figure-it-outer, right? So really quick, super fast story. When I was my production company, we made a show called Grimm. And I remember pitching Grimm for like 7 years, over and over. We'd pitch it. People wouldn't like kind of not get it. We'd put it on a shelf. We'd pitch it again. And I was in this one meeting at this one network, and this high-level executive was like, gosh, because there's a lot of special effects in it. They said to me, gosh, that seems so hard to do. That seems really, really hard to do every week in episode to episode. To which I sarcastically replied, well, then let's just not do it. Like, meaning everything is hard, right? So, so for you, this is what blows my mind about you, where did the ability come from to... Because movie after movie after movie is like, where did the ability come from to trust your ideas so deeply that you're seemingly willing to sacrifice almost everything to see it through? Like, for example, I remember reading decades ago about the studio writing check after check for Titanic because somehow you convinced them that all this is going to work, and obviously it did, but you succeed in this philosophy over and over again. Where do the balls come from to just be like, I got this. Trust me, I got this, you know?
Well, I think there's a thing of, when you see it in your head, it's kind of like you're watching the movie. So you kind of know then that the movie's good or not good, right? I mean, with some degree of accuracy. And secondly, once you're down the path and you find out how hard it is, you know, you can't really pull out. I can't pull out. Studio can't pull out. So we just got to play it through. And then I think there's something that happens that, all right, well, your standards of excellence better go up then because you can't screw this up.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it, you know. But look, every artist of any kind, actor, figurative artist, whatever, has to have the confidence in what they have to say to call themselves an artist in the first place. And if they get positive feedback with their first few works that are out there, then that confidence goes up, right?
Yeah.
You learn to trust your instincts.
You also have such a full understanding of what is possible through technology as well. In other words, you know, you can pitch something and a studio head might say, well, that sounds really expensive. Like, no, we can do that with computers, blah, 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 blah. How are you able to stay current with what is possible and cost effective based on how easy it is for that technology to be accessed, et cetera? Are you the one that's actually driving what is now possible technologically as opposed to making sure you read the right article to make sure you stay up to date on what's possible?
Yeah.
It's both. I mean, when we evaluate a project going into it, we'll look at what the state of the art is and we'll identify the areas where we have to, you know, up the game. Mm. And that's where we'll put our R&D money. And we'll look at our schedule and say, all right, we got 2 years to come up with water simulations, you know, computational fluid dynamics sims for ocean water. We've got X amount of time, and it just becomes a budget line item.
You know. So do you have people who are writing code for that who work for you?
Yeah.
So and you're directing them, saying, okay, guys, this is what we want to do. We want to do the water thing or whatever it is, and they go great, and they start to model it out, and they start writing code for it, and
which
really
is crazy.
Yeah. I
mean, and then the studio. Sorry, Sean. The studio then is financing the R&D, the making of that for that one film. Are they then, not to get in the weeds of all this stuff, I apologize, but are they then in line to reap the profits of that technology going forward for other projects at other studios?
Kind of yes, kind of no. It works like this. If we develop something for Avatar, and usually that's in the form of an asset, like a creature or a setting or something like that, that exists digitally. It sits in a server. They can reap the benefit of not having to recreate that every time. So the movies have a kind of economy of scale over the greater arc, you know, which is
almost
why
like a scene doc.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like a digital scene doc. It's exactly that. And your creatures and so on, you know, you can just call that stuff back up. So that's part of the argument for doing, you know, three or four films kind of back to back.
But the technology that you would use, let's say, for to make water better today than it was 5 years ago, let's say Studio X funded that movie during which you developed the code that made water better. Now in 5 years or a year later, you know, Universal does something that has something to do. They need to use it. Now, does Studio X get reimbursed for having developed that code?
Not really, no. They just kind of they spend the money to make that movie. But see, the thing is, we're leaving out an entity, which is the visual effects company.
Right.
So we work very closely with Weta Visual Effects, right down here in New Zealand, where I am right now.
Oh wow!
They'll develop that code. Now they'll use some of the money from what we pay them. They'll use some of their own internal resources to do it, and then we can go back to them anytime we want and take advantage of it.
And it's proprietary for them.
To them.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll explain it to Jason later. So Boy, Jim, let me ask
really
you about
helping me out a lot today.
Of course.
Thank you.
Well, we could have just done it in a second. So Jim, let me ask you this: Can you,
did you not play well today?
I don't
think you did.
I didn't. Yeah. I had a grumpy day. So Jim, did you? God, you. I hate that you know that. Jim, can you tell me what happened when you got into all this stuff with actual underwater stuff? When you were in submarines and doing all that kind of stuff?
I mean, I had like a 9-hour list of questions about all that.
No, I love that stuff. I sort of reached a point when I made Titanic where I was making the movie because I wanted to dive to the wreck. I had done thousands of hours underwater by then on scuba, right? But I hadn't done anything with submersibles. I'd made a movie about subs and about ROVs called The Abyss, and we built all the stuff for the movie, but we never took it in the ocean. So I wanted to go do something for real with deep diving. And then so Titanic was a way of kind of serving both of my greatest interests on one project, and it worked out great, made a bunch of money, and then I spent 8 years doing expeditions, building robots, building underwater cameras, building submersibles, and just kind of turned my back on the whole filmmaking thing for about 8 years.
That's amazing.
And then you come back to making the films and doing this like super ambitious stuff with the avatars, but is there part of you that's like, do you prefer one to the other? Do you wish you were just doing more exploration?
Sometimes.
And does the filmmaking just kind of subsidize that in a way?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it has so far. It's worked out that way. You know, Avatar made a bunch of money, so then I built a sub to go to the, you know, the deepest places on the planet and worked on that for several years after Avatar. Made those dives in 2012. So, yeah, for me, it's a full life. It doesn't really make sense to a lot of people looking at it from the outside, because in the entertainment business, we always put that first, like it's the most important thing in the world, and everything is all very self-referential within that reality bubble. But I was on the NASA Advisory Council. I've been in lots of environments where they don't even think about movies. We don't even exist for them. Maybe right. on a ship when you're out doing something really important, somebody will throw in, you know, a VHS, you know, right. of some comedy. That's all. That's the only time they ever think about it.
Well, luckily, nope. It's not for me either, because I've only made really bad movies and terrible TV shows, and everything's been canceled. But it's okay. I'm not successful in that way. But I'm good at a dinner party, Jim.
I'll keep that in mind.
I find it's so fascinating. It just occurred to me that you are incredible at creating fake life, and you are incredible at exploring the real raw, you know, building blocks of real life, you know, checking out like, you know, the depths of the earth.
Mm. Yeah.
Where the boring stuff, I guess, in comparison, the stuff in the middle, the stuff where the rest of us live, right? Domestic sort of life. Are you comfortable with the amount of time you spend in that lane as well? I'll bet you are.
Yeah. Well, I got five kids.
Yeah.
And that's
wow.
That's its own whole epic journey, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have kids, right?
Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah, I've got three. Right? Jason's got two. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a dog.
Yeah. Well, it's similar.
Yeah.
It's true. They scream and shit everywhere.
Yeah, except you never have to come down and bail out your dog.
Yeah. Right? This is true.
Yeah. But it's such an interesting, you're so incredible at both of those poles, and we just never hear about how awesome you are right there in the middle, but I'll bet you are.
But that's where we live. That's where we really live, right? So with the new Avatar sequels, I thought, like the way I brought that around, I wanted to talk about the shit that I'd been living for years as a father, as a husband, and all that sort of thing, and the dysfunction in families, the power and the strength that comes from being in a family, and what that all means, and then put that back into, you know, what I do as a director. In the same way I wanted to bring the underwater stuff into the directing, which I did on prior films, I wanted to do family. So these Avatar films are about family, told from the parents' perspective and from the kids' perspective.
Yeah.
By the way, you can talk about Avatar all you want. I'm it's one of my favorite. I'm obsessed. I can't believe I'm talking to you. All right, so you've been to the deepest part of the ocean. First of all, where did the love of the ocean come from? Why are you obsessed with it? And is it true that you've been down deeper than any other human? Is that true?
I've been down as deep as a couple of other humans.
Like 7 miles?
Yeah, it's almost seven.
Just
almost
one
seven.
More foot, you could have won.
Well, the problem is that when you get that deep, it's actually hard to know how deep you really are with great accuracy, like to within a foot. You can't do it within a foot. You can do it within kind of 30, 40 feet, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it was 7 miles, you say?
Yeah, it's almost 7 miles.
Wow,
35,800
feet. I know. How in the world did you, how in the world does something exist that can survive the pressure of that?
We built it.
Yeah. We built it.
Yeah.
You went so deep, and then you got to get a question from somebody who's so shallow. Jim, can you?
There's our clip.
You do a lot of, so you've made a living doing a lot of these great things. And of course, you've done, now we cover the deep sea, and you do all the, lot of, I guess, I hate to use the term science fiction because it feels almost too broad or it feels
good.
But is that what interests you? If you're going to watch something, if you're on a long plane ride down to New Zealand, for instance, I imagine you work all the time. But if you were to take the moment to watch other films and watch, are those the things?
Yeah.
Do you watch science fiction or do you watch dramas or do you watch comedy?
Everything. Yeah. I probably lean more toward drama, science fiction, historical fiction, that sort of thing. Comedy more when I'm with the family.
Sure.
Because I don't do it, you know, but there's always that aspect when you watch a movie and you get really enthusiastic about it, you know, you're learning something that you can apply back to your own art.
I'm going to pitch you a really great comedy series about a guy who's got the bends, but we'll get into it later.
Where do you land on...
It'd be short. It'd be very short.
It's very short, yeah, and it's very sad, actually. It's got a very sad ending. Yeah.
Where do you land on documentary? Because I'll bet you've got a lot of footage of just your expeditions that you've, that you've played with.
Well, you came... Do you enjoy had it? One. That was
They
huge.
Were all funded by the... Like, so the documentaries help pay for the expeditions, right?
Yeah.
So I think I've done right now, as producer and or director, somewhere like 11 or 12 documentaries.
Yeah.
And, you know...
One of the best ones called Deep Sea Challenge. Where that's the one where you built your own submarine. Yeah, I love that.
Deep Sea Challenge. And then there was Ghost of the Abyss, which was about Titanic, but you know, 3D documentary about the wreck and so on, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy sort of, again, the polarity of, you know, sitting in an editing room and seeing what you got and shaping something from that is more the typical documentary experience. And then in Avatar, you've got to not only have a script, but you're creating a lot of things digitally. So the amount of planning where there is almost zero surprise about creating in the editing room, I would imagine, in comparison to the process of documentary filmmaking. Again, like, where's that middle lane? Do you have any interest in that, you know?
Well, I love editing. Yeah. And I think I learned more editing documentaries than I did from editing features. But I think what I brought back into editing, let's say on Avatar 2, is it's an exploration. Just because you got all this footage doesn't mean you're a slave to it, you know? Yeah. And the story will reassert itself in the editing process. It's almost like a new draft of the script, if you will.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Is it ever tempting, as I hear they do in animation, to completely recreate a scene, an act, as opposed to going back, rewriting, reshooting? You can almost take an animated approach with it. I'm asking.
No, not what we're doing. I mean, Pixar could do that all day long. But it's an actor-centric process. So sure. I'd literally have to rewrite the scene, get the actors back together, you know, capture it again.
Gotcha.
Now, I could take a line from another scene and I could recreate the setting that I need and drop that actor's performance if it worked, you know, and you'd have to do it. And we've done that a couple of times. But the fun with the CG is I could take a scene that was shot supposedly as a day scene and make it night and make it rain, just like in like that, literally. Like, okay, guys, we're making that scene night
I'd
and
love
rain.
To skip night
Sean, he could shoot a scene with you and he could probably paint out the Skittles so they wouldn't be in your in your
keep
hand.
Them right next to you.
You could also make it rain Skittles, which would be make amazing.
You know, it's interesting that you use all this technology. Not only you use the technology, you're an innovator when it comes to technology. And it's funny that Terminator and the Terminator films are about a cautionary tale of technology gone awry, if you will. Are you afraid of the machines?
Oh, absolutely. Great. Well, I'm not afraid, but I'm certainly pretty pretty concerned about the potential for misuse of AI.
Yeah.
I think AI can be great. I also think it could, you know, it could literally be the end of the world. I mean, you talk to all of the AI scientists, and I know a bunch of them. And they every time I put my hand up at one of their, you know, their seminars or something, they just start laughing.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, that's that Skynet guy. Yeah, sure. Yeah. We really want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, the point is that no technology has ever not been weaponized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do we really want to be fighting something smarter than us that isn't us on our own world? I don't think so. I mean, look, an AI could have taken over the world and already be manipulating it, and we just don't know because it would have control over all the media and everything. And what better explanation for how absurd everything is right now? Because nothing makes a damn bit of sense to me. I don't know about you guys.
No, that's exactly right. Well, I mean, you're there, but as you know, here we're living in a place where it just seems very upside down, and people are believing seemingly everything. And it's a great point, which is potentially if the AI is smarter than us and has the potential to be smarter than us, why would it let us know that it was beating us? Because that would be foolish of it to do that.
That's right. You
know?
It'd be so easy to cover up.
It would be so easy to cover up. But do you feel a responsibility, have you ever felt, or do you feel increasingly a responsibility to have more of a message? In your films, do you try to...
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Avatar films are about the environment. I'm not dealing with AI.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to do another Terminator film and maybe try to launch that franchise again, which is in discussion, but nothing's been decided, I would make it much more about the AI side of it than kind of bad robots gone crazy.
Please do. I would watch that in 2 seconds.
Because the AI thing, not to put the audience to sleep, because I've done that before talking about this subject, but it just for clarification for me, because you know this answer, I'll bet you, AI it's about a computing speed, right? It's an ability to absorb a bunch of information, process it, and spit it back out.
I think it has more to do with understanding human consciousness so that we collectively, human technologists, can create an intelligence that functions the way we do. Mm-hmm. Meaning they call it AGI, artificial general intelligence, that it's not just designed to play chess and beat your ass at chess. Mm-hmm. It's designed to solve all kinds of problems. So it needs more of a consciousness the way we view and react to the world.
And that's made possible just because it's able to absorb so much information now?
Vast amounts of data, yes. Gotcha. You're right. So there's AI and there's AGI. So AI learns. AI is more simple, more directed functions. And what they do is they just shove a whole bunch of training data into it.
All the books in the world.
Yeah, kind
literally.
Of, or all the, or, yeah. or you know, all the YouTube, all the, yeah. all the yeah. Twitter, you know, everything. And they just force feed it vast amounts of what they call training data, right? And from that training data, they pose it a problem and says, all right, try a million different things and see what works better than what, and then try another million things. And it basically is just throwing processing time at the problem.
Well, and there's so much computing power, you know, in all our devices. Sean probably doesn't want me to tell this, but his Roomba has been listening to him and it just ordered Chinese food last night.
No. So, it's learning.
To serve
learning.
It's learning.
Yeah. Well, you know who's going to be vacuuming the room in about 5 years. Ain't going to be Roomba.
No, it ain't going to be Roomba. Yeah. It's going to be us for the machines.
Yep.
We'll be right back. Hey, Smartless listener. We get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria. And it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places. And I know, total nerdville. But it was pretty cool. And I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing. So maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, back to the show.
No, wait, but Jim, did you ever, to that point, Jason's point that you were talking about, did you ever see the movie Ex Machina?
Yeah, it's great. It deals with that issue, yeah.
It's that same issue about creating a robot or an AI that actually figures out how to mimic everything that is human so that the human is fooled.
Well, what they say to you know, people that are on the spectrum, they say fake it till you make it. You know, it's like just watch behavior and then learn from it, and then you'll fit in better. You know, and that's just what they'll do. That's what AGI will do.
Yeah. I heard somebody told me a couple of years ago that, and maybe you've probably heard it. You've been at a lot of these conferences and symposiums and whatever gatherings.
Yeah,
that this is at least 2 years ago. This person said to me that somebody at Alphabet or Google or whatever had said to them that they were not concerned, but they said it is the algorithm is already doing things on its own that they don't understand how it knows how
that's
to
right.
do.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's the big problem with using AI to solve any problem is you may get a good result, but it can't tell you what it did.
Wow.
Right.
Because it's just randomly problem solving hundreds of millions of times and then just course correcting within that. And it doesn't necessarily know why it's better to do it this way versus that way. It just knows that it is. And so it'll just keep doing that and iterating. So it can't tell you how it's solving the problem because it doesn't know.
That's crazy. It's going to start making movies. Jim, you've taught it to make movies. Now it's going to start making movies and it's not going to know why.
Wasn't me, man.
what about crypto? I want to know, because do you believe in crypto?
No.
Good for you.
No.
That's the answer I was looking for.
With all of this intelligent stuff, do you do anything that's real dumbass? What's the stupidest thing that you do?
I could tell you some really stupid things, but it'll get back to my kids and then see that's not
well, what about like
happen.
A dumb hobby? Like, do you
bowling.
Love playing marbles.
Bowling. Bowling,
you and Mookie Betts.
Yeah, Gene Simmons of Kiss taught me to bowl at his birthday party about 30 years ago, and I actually enjoyed it. It's like, who knew? Bowling was fun.
Have you bowled a perfect game yet?
No.
Have you gotten close?
I have gotten real drunk, bet everybody like a lot of money that I would throw a strike and thrown it, and then walked out. Of course, that was a mic drop because I knew I could never do it again.
Are you a sports guy? Do you follow any sports at all?
No.
Not interested.
I have limited RAM, and I need to use it for what I need to use it for.
Yeah. Do you think it's a waste of time? I watch a lot of sports. Am I wasting my time?
No. If you're having fun, you're not wasting your time.
Okay. All right.
Now, how do you like it? What are you doing down there in New Zealand? Are you still working on the movie?
We're just finishing up. We're mixing the last couple reels, as we speak, finishing up. We started out with 3,250 shots. I'm down to 12.
God.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. How do you zoom out and have like perspective on something like that?
I'll get back to you on that.
Is the first one coming out?
Okay, so Avatar: The Way of Water is coming out in December, and then 2 years later, Avatar 3. You know, we haven't officially picked a title yet.
Yeah,
comes
which out. You've already shot.
We've shot it, and we're in post on it. I've seen a cut of the film, but we still have to finish all the effects. It's that 3,000 shot thing starts again.
Wow. Is that what's driving the 2-year gap between it, or was that intentional to have it be 2 years?
Yeah, it's just the finish work. It takes us about 2 years to finish a movie that's otherwise all shot and edited. Yeah.
Are you the kind of guy, it strikes me that you might be, that you're up at sort of 5 a.m. looking at stuff, you're working all day, you sleep a few hours, and then you're back, and you wake up because you're bothered by unfinished business?
Sometimes I'll wake up with the answer to a problem. I don't usually wake up because I'm bothered by it, but every once in a while there's a eureka moment, right?
Yeah.
But I get up at 5 every day. I work out, I noodle around for a while, you know, family stuff. And then I, you know, go to work at 8 and work 12 hours.
Where do you do your best thinking? Are you a walker? Are you stare at a wall? Like on planes, some people really see clearly?
Stare at a wall.
Yeah. Planes are good. Walks are good. Dreams are good.
Yeah.
Dreams are good.
Yeah.
I do a lot of work in dreams, and it's not any kind of trained kind of lucid dreaming. It's just sometimes solutions just work themselves out.
Really?
You'd be a great person to take us into that unknown place, you know, what dream, where they come from, where thoughts come
from. I think it's amazing.
And, why don't we do that next?
Please do that.
I was trying to answer a question. Another filmmaker had asked me in one of these kind of staged interview things in a magazine, like, you know, about the screenwriting process. And I said, everybody is screenwriting every night.
Yeah.
We've got an engine in our head that tells a story in the form of a dream every single night.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think when we're screenwriting, we're just formalizing that process or giving that engine, you know, more power, more dominance over our consciousness.
Yeah.
Have you ever actually legitimately had a dream and you've written it down and it's become the nucleus of like an idea of an actual film? Really?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
Terminator.
Yeah.
Terminator. I had an image in a dream of this metal skeleton coming out of the fire. It's like, boom, wrote that down. Avatar, you know, I saw the luminous forest in a dream with the little spinning lizards and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Drew it. I didn't write it down. I drew it. I painted it. And I was thinking I was 19 when that happened.
Yeah, I was going to say high school.
Really?
Yeah.
And so that was Avatar was something that was always there, kind of in the back of your mind. It was this thing that
For years.
Yeah, this thing for years that you wanted to do.
Yeah, at this point, that was half a century ago. But it wasn't in the form of Avatar. It wasn't in the form of that story. It was just random imagery, you know. And so the way I write, I don't know how you guys write, but the way I write is I start going forward from character, and I start working backward from just shit I want to see. And then there's all the middle bit where I get the characters into the places that I want to see, right?
Yeah, no so way, cool. Really? That's pretty much fascinating. Yeah. That is fascinating.
Sometimes I felt like Mitch Hurwitz was doing that on Arrested Development. He'd think up like the most genius sort of crazy stuff and he'd just write backwards and make it plausible that we would arrive at that point.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, if you know your ending, you can just write the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. So now I want to just, we got to let you go like in just a couple minutes, but I'm sorry to go way back, but I did have tons of questions about the ocean. And I knew, because I think it's just as fascinating as space. I don't ever want to go down the ocean. I mean, it scares the shit out of me. But because I've seen too many movies, I can't swim. So there's a whole thing.
Hang on. Do I know that?
That I can't swim? Well, I went to the ocean with you a couple months ago. But we only went up to our waist. Like, I don't want to go in.
But have we had this conversation? You truly do not know how to swim.
I don't kind of know how to swim. No, not really.
What?
And I'm colorblind. Okay,
like
so anyway.
A French bulldog. You just go right to the bottom, huh?
Let's just all list all the stuff we can't do and our deficits.
Well, hang on.
It'll be so cathartic. It'll be so cathartic.
They named the Rolex watch out of him. He goes so deep. You know what I mean?
Okay, wait a minute. I do have this question. So, because I read in anticipation of this, I don't know the story. I read that you took a chicken in a cage when you went down to the bottom when you did that long thing. A, why? B, what
dead
happened?
Chicken.
Oh, a dead chicken.
Oh, yeah, not a live chicken. Yeah, no, it was just a chicken, right? You know, like a broiler from
why
the supermarket.
Why did he need the cage?
It wasn't,
he's not
it
going
was,
anywhere.
Just hold him in your question. Hand, Jim.
He was outside the sub. He was actually on a robotic lander. And it was just in a wire frame. Why do I feel so persecuted here?
No, I want to know. I want to know. Like, what was the result?
We wanted to film this sucker getting ripped apart by these little amphipods that live down there that are like the deep ocean piranha. And in a 5-minute time lapse, they come in and strip it to the bone.
Wow.
Wow.
So if you've ever, you know, you've ever seen a burial at sea, you know, with the flag and the guy goes out from under the flag, he's a skeleton in about 20 minutes.
Now, wow. can I ask you why? How did you arrive at a chicken? Did you just think, well, they're going to freak out because they never smelt or tasted anything from land? In other words, like, why didn't you use a dead fish? They'd rip that apart too. Did you think chicken, oh, they're going to love this?
They'll eat anything. They don't care because yeah. the protein for them is like manna from heaven. It just yeah. falls from above. There's nothing yeah. really much that's very big down where they live, and they just scavenge on whatever falls out. So sometimes it could be a whale or a dolphin or a fish or right. whatever. I don't think they're very picky.
I read somewhere
the occasional human, you know.
Sure, sure.
World
sure.
War II. Right?
Or heaven help Sean Hayes if he ever gets out there. He'll be right
well,
down there.
You can yeah. just hanging outside my door. Right.
You have a pool at your house.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you not swim?
I know. Well, I doggy paddle.
I'm going to text you after this.
Jason and I will pool together. We're gonna get you some swim lessons.
You're gonna hold me up
or some floaties.
Yeah, hold you up. Yeah, Jim. What do you think when you're done with all of this? And because you've done so much, and the breadth of which is really pretty astonishing, whether it's filmmaking or all this oceanic stuff, et cetera, et cetera. What do you want to be remembered for? What's your legacy? Because it's pretty remarkable.
I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. I love that.
Yeah, you could qualify for a bunch of legacy things there. What yeah. if you had to pick one?
I think, explorer, filmmaker, storyteller. I think an explorer is a storyteller. You go someplace and you come back and you tell the story, right?
Yeah. yeah.
So a documentary filmmaker is a storyteller. Scripted filmmaker is a storyteller. I don't know. I mean, do I have to choose?
They'll do it. Believe me. Yeah. But it is really remarkable. Haven't you discovered a species or two as well? Perhaps.
Yeah, a few. Yeah. About 100.
Really?
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah. You see a lot of stuff no one's ever seen when you get down there. I'll bet.
Mostly small. Mostly small stuff, but definitely.
You
things.
Know, Sigourney Weaver said once. She's because of all your diving. She said. They, as a cast, kept thinking, I hope he survives to make another movie.
That's Sig thinking about her career again. Uh-huh. You know.
I can't imagine how difficult it must be to make your deal on all this stuff. It must be so complicated. I was just thinking about the lawyers of it all.
Oh, because of the risky things that he does?
I love the part that where they tell me I can't fly in a private plane or a helicopter, and they forget to put that I can't take a sub 7 miles down.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But that's my point is like you do all this stuff. It's super risky. And also like the technology is proprietary and it's stuff that you're coming up with. And you're like, hey, man, what happened today? Like your kids might be like, Dad, what'd you do? Well, we were shooting some stuff and I discovered three new species and I built a submarine.
My kids couldn't care less.
Is that
about
true?
What I do during the day. No.
How old are your kids? What are the ranges?
15, 18, 21, 29, and 34.
Nice.
But the teenagers, they couldn't care less.
Right,
whatever your parents are doing is not interesting by definition.
Yeah. Yeah. No, right? Jason and I know we have teenagers and they just couldn't. I have a 14-year-old boy. He has a 16 yeah. now-year-old girl. Our kids just do not care. They are so nonplussed.
Keeps us humble.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Thank God. Well, you are the king of the world.
You really are. You're remarkable.
Yeah, until I walk in the front door.
Yeah, exactly. In every house but yours.
Truly, it's been such a huge, huge honor to meet you and listen to all of this today. It's just, you are such a pivotal part of my childhood and my adulthood and just... I just think you're incredible. So
you're
52.
I'm 52. I'm 68. Don't put that on me.
You are though. But I was growing up, and I was like, I would watch those over and. By the way, I can't not watch. By the you know my age more than my own father does. But I can't believe every time.
Hey, we got somebody we'd like to put in a submarine. Actually, speaking of that,
I can do it.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not going to say that you're part of my childhood. I'm going to say you're a tremendous peer. I like consider you a peer.
There you go.
I've had a good time hanging out with you guys today. It's been great.
Well, thank you for doing it. Thank you for all your hard work.
Yeah,
Jim.
You're a remarkable artist and adventurer, and thank you for everything.
All right, cool. Yeah. This has been great.
Good luck with the film. Can't wait to see it.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
All right, take care.
All right, back to the mix.
Pretty cool.
Wow.
You know what I kept thinking, though, is like, it's just a testament to his tenacity to just believe in something. That's why I asked that long-winded question about, like, how do you not go, I was just kidding. Like, when the dollar amount gets to, remember when Titanic was the most expensive film ever made?
Yeah. And then Avatar was. And yeah, now and these two probably are. I mean, how does he convince
these
studios?
So when it gets to like $200 million, which is what Titanic was at the time.
Was it really?
How are you not like, oh, okay, never mind, just kidding. Like,
and then it was the first one to make a billion?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, what a roll of the dice over and over and over again.
But then like, you know, you do something like Avatar and he spawns like an ancillary thing, like Blue Man Group, you know. Blue Man Group inspired Avatar.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
I was really hoping I'd get you on that one.
Wait, what? For 2 seconds, I was like, I don't remember reading that.
Can you imagine if they tried to sue Jim Cameron? But the part is, when they testify, they don't say anything. They're just drumming and shit, and they keep...
Surprised Mitch didn't give that line to David Cross in Arrested. Like,
I know.
While he's all made up in the blue stuff, he went and read for Avatar.
I mean, I think that some people are just wired differently, and he's just wired in a different way.
Did you ever see the making of The Abyss, or have you ever seen The Abyss?
No, yeah, I've seen
The Abyss. Yeah, I love The Abyss.
Oh, yeah,
you got it. I've seen the making of it like 5 times. It's mind-blowing that he built this tank, and then they forgot to put salt in it, so it was all fuzzy or something like that. And so then they had it was problem after problem after problem for a year and a half, 2 years. And they only had so much time to breathe underwater, and then they couldn't see the faces, so they put lights in the helmets, and it was just nuts.
Yeah, the amount of knowledge he has to have, like from computer technology to like engineering I don't know how you get it all in there.
But Jay, you know, it's funny you say that. I think that part of it must be that he's willing to take a risk, and he's willing to make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not nervous. He didn't get it first try.
Right.
All that stuff he came up with, it would be trial and error. And he seems to be the kind of guy who has the confidence to go like, yeah, I don't know how to do it, but we're going to figure it out.
Yes,
and we'll keep going.
That's what I love.
There's something, there's a real lesson in that, because we're all, I know I am. You get nervous. You have those moments where you're like, I don't want to fuck up, or I don't want to look stupid, or whatever. And truly, you know, creating great things comes out of these, you know, if you have the frame of mind of like, yeah, I'm willing to fall on my face.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being able to be convincing and articulate your vision, your plan, and lead. Yeah. He's clearly one of our best, I guess.
What if the Y was an I in that movie title?
Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. Get ready. Get ready, Will.
What would it be called?
Gee, I don't know. What do you mean?
What would it be thinking, called? The Abyss.
Goodbye.
They're always the worst.
I know.
They're always just terrible.
I know. Because he always wants to go to buy and switch. It's the same way that he switched subjects, just on a dime. We're just getting somewhere. We're having a conversation. We're wrapping up talking about the incredible Jim Cameron. And you,
Jim Cameron.
Somebody mentioned
a chicken in the ocean.
And you're like, hey, I got to go find a deep fried chicken somewhere. You're just thinking about a bobbing chicken. And you're like, wow.
I had so many ocean questions.
I want that animator to do Jim taking a chicken down into the 7 miles down.
Oh,
all right. Well, listen. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday.
Love to you and yours.
Is that buy or we did we buy
I
it out?
I think we I buy,
just do a
we
regular
we,
buy.
We abyssed. We ab we abyssed.
Listen,
we abyssed.
I didn't think it was the greatest sign off, but you know what? I'm biased.
Yes. Oh, that's it's bad.
What we've done for the audience is we've done our own audio documentary on the making of a bice. Does that work?
Smart. Yes.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Bennett Barbaco, Michael Grant Terry, and Rob Armjarf.
Smartless.
If you like SmartLess, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.